It's time for EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to Eco Talk, all you non-ostriches out there, Air America listeners. This is where we green the red and blue states one show at a time. Today's program brings together two eco-visionaries with two very different views of the power of nuclear to, in one case, destroy us, and in the other instance, save our backsides. By the end of the hour, I promise you will form your own opinion on this red-hot topic with more ammunition in your arsenal than you have right now. And that's not bad for 1 hour of listening. I promise you it'll be engaging. Newcomers to our program should know that we take a broad view of environmental issues. It's about our health. It's about our economy. It's about national security. It's about our future. It's about your kids. It's about where we live. We often take a lighter touch, although today will not be one of those with a humorous take on our current situation, although sometimes better to laugh than cry. This one will be one of the heavier topics, but critically important. I hope you will agree to our survival, and I promise we will lighten things up. We've got a whole long guest list coming up in the next couple of weeks. You'll hear from Johnny Steele, our resident eco-comedian. We're going to have Tree Hugger as one of our partners with lots of great produced hip pieces because they're mostly 20s and 30s, and our team is, our producer's in his 20s, but the rest of us are 40-something. We want to give you the whole range of ways to look at what we're facing and also give you a lot of hope, even though today's show may do just the opposite. But let's start with the bad news and we'll go forward from here. Want to introduce our first guest, Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's a legendary physician, writer, and founder of the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, joining us to explain why nuclear power is not the answer, which also happens to be the title of her just released book. In our second half, we'll hear from James Lovelock. He is the esteemed scientist and actual originator of the Gaia hypothesis some 30 years ago. He provides a different take on nuclear energy while he takes on the fate of the planet in his just-released book, The Revenge of Gaia. So two different views. Unfortunately, we couldn't get them on at the exact same time in the same segments, but you'll hear them both this hour, and I'm sure it'll be interesting. So thanks for joining us, Dr. Caldicott. Welcome back to EcoTalk. You've been with us once before, I think, when your last book came out. When do you sleep?
When do I sleep?
Yeah. You've got how many books? 4 or 5 books out, and you're on the lecture circuit. You seem tireless in your energy and your dedication.
Well, yeah, I sleep about 8 or 9 hours a night, so and I need that. Even though I'm getting older, I still need a lot of sleep.
And you don't stay awake at night worried about the fact that there's now a resurgence in interest in nuclear power.
Well, if I wake up at night and I let myself think, I get very anxious. So if I wake up at night, I purposely don't allow myself to think because things are so grim. And the way I make myself feel better is to write books and to give talks about how grim things are, which allows me some psychological freedom to feel that I might be able to do some good.
Oh, you're making us all worry so you can feel better. I see. Just kidding.
No. Wait a minute. I'm a physician, and it's imperative that in medicine we tell people the truth, describe their syndrome, their symptoms, their signs, their pathology, so they understand and they can partner with us to cure themselves. So that's what I'm doing on a global basis.
And I was a journalist turned activist, which leaves me kind of radioactive, I often joke, but I guess I shouldn't say that to you.
No.
What are you surprised by this new talk about building new nuclear power plants and how that really is the answer to global warming? Because proponents of that form of energy say it's not going to contribute to global warming, no greenhouse gas emissions. First of all, are you surprised? And secondly, why may that not be the case?
I guess I'm never surprised at anything the nuclear industry does. I've debated them now for 35 years, and so often they lie that I'm not surprised by anything. However, there's been a wonderful study done by a Dutchman called Storm van Leeuwen and his partner Philip Smith, an American who's since died, who's looked at the whole CO2 output of the nuclear fuel chain. A nuclear power plant doesn't stand alone. True, a nuclear reactor produces no global warming gases, although it continuously emits radioactive gases and materials into the cooling water all the time as it operates routinely. But if you take the amount of millions of tons of uranium ore that must be dug out of the earth using fossil fuel, then you have to crush the ore with huge milling plants using fossil fuel. then it has to be enriched, the uranium, at a plant at Paducah, Kentucky, where they use two huge coal-fired plants to enrich the uranium, where they also release 93% of the CFC-114 gas into the air per year in America, which is banned under the Montreal Protocol because it both damages the ozone and is a very, very potent global warmer, 20,000 times more so than CO2. Then you build the reactor, and actually the formation of concrete releases a huge amount of CO2. Then you have to decommission the reactor after 30 or 40 years by remote control using robots and fossil fuel. Then you have to transport, cool and store the radioactive waste safely for up to 500,000 years. Now, if you just take the front end of the fuel chain from mining to the building of the reactor and leave the back end out of it, the amount of carbon dioxide, which is 50% of the global warming gas, produced is about one-third that produced by a similar-sized gas-fired electricity-generating plant. But as the uranium declines in concentration over the next decade or two, in fact, a nuclear reactor will produce about the same amount of carbon dioxide as a similar-sized gas-fired plant. So, in fact, nuclear power, rather than stopping global warming, adds substantially global warming. So therefore, the nuclear industry, the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda, is lying. And I do not tolerate scientists who lie.
Now, it's not just the nuclear industry that's promoting its use. It's the Bush administration, of course. Now, do you think that their move to ramp up nuclear energy really comes from a desire to produce more weapons, or they believe it really is the answer to our energy needs, or both?
Well, America doesn't make weapons from its nuclear power plants. It's got its own weapons-producing nuclear reactors, which actually are closed down at the moment. But it's also true that any country that has a reactor can make bombs because nuclear power plants produce plutonium, which is the raw material for nuclear weapons. I know that when Cheney formulated his energy policy in the year 2003, he met five times with Kenny Lay, who is now dead, but who is the founder and owner of Enron. He met with coal people and nuclear people. He did not meet, I think, with any ecologists or environmentalists or people into renewable energies. And, in fact, he will not release the data from his meetings or the minutes to the general public, which he should do according to the law. So you have to know that Cheney is not a scientist. I know someone who was at Yale with him. Not a terribly bright intellectual guy, in fact. He's got an interesting history. And the people behind the Bush, I mean, he's not a scientist either. That's, putting it mildly. So the people who are formulating the energy policy, including Domenici and all the rest, are not biologists. They're not geneticists. They're not physicians. They're not pathologists. They're not scientists, and so they're politicians who are bribed and manipulated by the powerful corporations who run this country from an energy perspective. And someone said if the oil companies could put a blanket around the earth and sell holes in it so the sun could get through, they would have been into solar power years ago because they want to control the electricity production.
Now, what about James Lovelock? He is an esteemed scientist and has been looking at environmental issues for more than three decades. What do you think of his claim in his book that nuclear really is the answer? And we'll
wrong.
Have him a chance to respond to your response in
He's
the next
wrong.
Half
I
hour.
I have talked to James Lovelock twice. In fact, he was very enthusiastic when I called him. I was in Sydney, Australia. He was in England. And he said, you know, your book, Nuclear Madness, is the best book I've read on the medical effects of nuclear power, the very best. He said that. But he has been a supporter of nuclear power for 20 years. He is not a physician. He is a medical scientist. But, you know, I have to suspect him. He said that he would be prepared to heat his house by putting nuclear waste in his basement. He's absolutely right on global warming, and he's absolutely wrong on nuclear power. And if he knew more about it as a scientist, then he would not be in favor of it. Clearly, he doesn't understand the nuclear fuel cycle. He doesn't understand the isotopes. He doesn't understand the bioconcentration in the food chain and the like and the like.
We'll hear from him in another segment, but we're going to be back with Dr. Helen Caldicott right after this break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Eco Talk. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, in conversation with Helen Caldicott. Probably needs no introduction, but in case you're not aware, she is almost single-handedly embodying the anti-nuclear cause, and it's never been more relevant than ever. In fact, she has a book just out called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. She's telling us why it is not, and in our next half of the show, we're going to be talking to someone who thinks it is our salvation, that nuclear power is our only hope. So we'll juxtapose those two points of view and come away with a little bit more information and a little bit more talking points as we progressives get out there and be the ambassadors we need to be with our family, our friends, and let people know what's going on, what we need to know to move things forward and not backward. Thanks for joining us again. What do you think about what's happening with Iran? I've heard you speak, and it sounds like sometimes you're more angry at our administration, justifiably, than you are at what Iran's doing, which is, you know, at the least delaying and at worst planning some sinister actions.
Well, that's actually not true, Betsy. Iran, under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, is allowed to enrich uranium to 3% for use in nuclear power. What they're doing is totally legal. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency in El Baradei, what they're doing is legal. At the moment, they have 164 centrifuges. To make enough enriched uranium for its nuclear power plants, it's going to need thousands of centrifuges, which it doesn't have. If it wanted to produce highly enriched uranium to make bombs, it would take at least 5 or 10 years to do that, according to the IAEA. And there's no evidence that they want to do that or will. But, you know, the neocons wrote about this in the Project for a New American Century in 1998. They said that they would go into Iraq, and they have, and they've probably killed over 300,000 innocent people there in mass slaughter, and under the false pretext of weapons of mass destruction, which they didn't have. And now they're setting up another set of lies to say Iran is going to make nuclear weapons. There's absolutely no evidence that it is, but America has said that it will bomb Iran and its nuclear facilities, and it says that if it doesn't, Israel will. They are mooting using nuclear weapons on Iran. If they bomb the nuclear facilities in Iran containing uranium, which is a carcinogen, spreading uranium all over the place with a nuclear weapon, which will spread fallout all over the place. The fallout could reach out to Pakistan and kill hundreds of thousands of people, according to a study I think just published by the Union of Concerned Scientists. So that I am just appalled at what the Bush administration is doing. I mean, they're into killing. And I've been to Iran. It's a very interesting society.
It is, but there's a society, and then there's the madman they have as president who said he's out to destroy Israel.
They say that he said Israel needs to be destroyed, but then other people who've read the Farsi language and his speech said that he actually didn't say those exact words.
Then you should go on Larry King with a retraction. It's causing a little stir here. I don't want to get too bogged down in that, although it's certainly an interesting topic to explore. But we just have a few more minutes with you, and we have to talk about alternative fuels. Why are they getting short shrift compared to nuclear? I guess maybe not surprising under this administration.
Well, the administration has just allocated in the Senate $13 billion for nuclear reactors, which would help to build 5. They allocated that last year with virtually no money for renewables. Now, I am putting together in my Nuclear Policy Research Institute a roadmap for a totally carbon-free, nuclear-free energy future using an array of alternatives. Solar. There should be a solar panel on every house subsidized by the federal government. A solar hot water system on every house subsidized by the federal government. Every household should have a hybrid car subsidized by the federal government. Instead of spending $600 billion a year on weapons of mass destruction, we could spend that money to save the planet. Wind power is now so popular that farmers make more money out of wind farms than they do out of growing food. Geothermal is available to heat and cool houses throughout the year in all climates. Cogeneration can generate electricity from the waste heat from industry. And above and beyond all, Americans could conserve and save 28% of the electricity they currently use by turning off their lights, their VCRs, their computers, and the like and the like. So, in fact, our roadmap will be produced in 9 months. It's going to be a very comprehensive economic and technological study. We will make a summary of 3 pages of bullet points and put that summary in every legislator's hand in the country and indeed the world.
Okay, we have just about a minute and a half, and in your DVD that I just watched, a very interesting portrait of Helen Caldicott, if you'd like to see it. It's called Helen's War. In it, you say a lot of things, but one of the quotes that sort of touched me is, we should all be weeping. Well, maybe we should all have a good cry, but obviously then we need to get busy.
Yeah, well, if we weep, it means that, you know, we've been touched. Our heart and soul has been touched by the dire emergency facing the planet, which currently is in the intensive care unit. And then we'll all rise up and become physicians to save our beloved Earth and our beloved children and grandchildren. That's true love. If you love this planet, you will go into your grief, go through it, you'll cry, and then you'll be inspired and guided to do what is necessary to save the Earth.
You're here, and in the last 40 seconds, what have you learned over the last four decades of activism?
Oh, I really knew it when I was practicing medicine, that in every human being is a heart and soul of great beauty and passion, even in George Bush, and that we're all capable of doing the right thing if we decide to do it. I believe in the goodness of every single person on Earth. And if we harness the good and not the evil, we'll save the planet.
And thank you for all the good work you're doing, continuing to do. Helen Caldicott, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, is the name of her new book. When we come back, we'll be speaking with the author of another new book called The Revenge of Gaia, Earth's Climate Crisis and the Fate of Humanity. How can you not stay tuned for that?